Hi, I'm Shashank Bhargav, and you're listening to Three Things, the Indian Express news show.
In this episode, we talk about the smart city project and the problems it has been facing. We also discuss why so many people right now are feeling sick and experiencing severe flu symptoms. But first, we talk about the Taliban. It has now been nearly 2 years since the Taliban took over Kabul, and till date, India has refused to recognize their regime. But recently, it sent an invitation to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Kabul to attend an online course which has been designed by India's Ministry of External Affairs. And because of that, members of the Taliban are now attending this course, which is being conducted with the help of the Indian Institute of Management, Kozhikode. In this segment, we speak to Indian Express's National Editor for Strategic Affairs, Nirupama Subramanian, about this development. Nirupama, before we talk about this online course, could you talk about in what sense has India engaged with the Taliban since it took over Kabul?
So you would recall that when the Taliban took over on August 15th, 2021, 2 days later, the embassy, the government took the decision to shut down the embassy, and all the people there, about 200 or 300 people who, not just from the embassy, but other Indians in Afghanistan, they were all evacuated and they came back in flights, in a couple of flights, I think it took them to evacuate everybody. And after that, there was this gap. And then in June last year, they reopened the embassy. But it is not the full-strength embassy as it used to be earlier. And since then, there has been some level of engagement. Obviously, if you have an embassy in a country, you can't just shut yourself in. You do engage with the government of that country. And this is what has been happening. We don't hear much of it, but we do know that trade goes on between India and Afghanistan. There are flights that operating between the two countries. There are flights that carry passengers. There are flights that carry freight. In some sense, there is some interaction between Delhi and the Taliban regime in Kabul. Although India does not recognize that regime as the legitimate authority in Afghanistan.
Right, and the Taliban has wanted India to continue the projects that it had been doing in the area, right? Because India has invested a lot in that region, building all sorts of infrastructure projects.
Yeah, so India had poured in billions of dollars into building so much in Afghanistan, into the rebuilding, if you can call that. Built the parliament, house, hospitals, schools, roads, dams. The Salma Dam, you know, is one of the big projects that India undertook. So I recall that when I visited Kabul last year, in August 2022, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesman told me in an interview that the Taliban authorities would want India to restart the projects that had got interrupted by, you know, by this upheaval, or that India had stopped when the Taliban took over. So I guess that may be an ongoing conversation.
Okay, so now let's talk about this course. Tell us, what is it about and how many Taliban members are joining it?
Okay, let me just say at first that the Ministry of External Affairs has a capacity building arm. Basically, this is called the International Technical and Economic Cooperation Program, and it is a division under the External Affairs Ministry. And what it does is that it does projects in other countries which need them for capacity building, matlab training, or basically technical training, or even India has trained foreign service officers in Afghanistan. India has trained teachers, health workers, doctors. So wherever it is required. And Afghanistan is one place where they did have these capacity building programs over the last 2 decades. Again, these, like the infrastructure development programs, these also got interrupted by the events of 2021 when the Taliban took over. So it looks that they have restarted this, because what has happened is that this came to the fore with a Taliban circular. So this circular mentioned an Indian letter, a letter from the Indian embassy in Kabul, saying that there is this particular course, which is called Immerse in Indian Thoughts. Basically, it's a four-day course about India, about business practices, the economy, and various other associated things, culture, you know, infrastructure, a lot of things which are packed into this four-day course. And that letter from the Indian embassy in Kabul invited the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Kabul to nominate representatives from their ranks to attend this course.
Okay, so the Indian embassy in Kabul invited Afghanistan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, which is now run by the Taliban, to attend this course, which again is being offered through IIM Kozhikode. And as of yesterday, some 12 people have joined this online course from Afghanistan. So in light of what we have talked about, how do we see this development? Is it another way that India is continuing to engage with the Taliban?
Yeah, having an embassy in a particular country means you are going to engage with that country in one way or another continuously. I think there's been an incremental increase in the engagement, and this is a sign that it is indeed happening. So offering a course to the Taliban, I mean, this is the first time that the Taliban will be training in India.
Right, and this is also significant because, like you have highlighted in our previous discussions, you know, that some individual members of the Taliban are still designated as terrorists by the UN Security Council.
Yeah, so in that sense, India, I think, is very much aware of that, which is why I don't think we don't read much about any big ticket engagement with the Taliban. Even their outreach to Delhi saying, rebuild this, or, you know, rebuild that dam, or restart your infrastructure projects. I don't think we've reached a stage where Delhi will say, yes, we are going to now come back full in and we can restart everything. The idea behind opening the embassy in any case was not so much that we will have these the kind of exchanges that we used to in the past, but just for India to have a presence in that country. You know, in today's language, it would be called FOMO, because we don't want that entire space to be taken over perhaps by China, by Pakistan, because these two countries are very active in Afghanistan, you know, and there are all manner of groups that are present in Afghanistan, including ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and UN reports have made mention of these, of their presence in Afghanistan. So India perhaps sees some rationale at this point to be present in Afghanistan and engage with the Taliban in some measure.
And next we talk about the Smart Cities mission. Back in 2015, around 100 cities were selected for the central government's Smart Cities mission. And the idea behind this mission was to build the kind of infrastructure that would provide a decent quality of life to people, a clean and sustainable environment that could transform the way urban development is done in the country. Here's PM Modi talking about it back in 2014.
Why hamare desh mein 100 naye shahar bane, aadhunik shahar bane, walk to work concept ke roop mein bane, स्मार्ट सिटी बने, आवश्यकता अनुसार कहीं हेल्थ सिटी बने, कहीं स्पोर्ट सिटी बने, ये स्पेशलाइज्ड सिटी क्यों ना बने।
Now the initial plan was to build these cities in 5 years, but this deadline got extended to June 2023 due to COVID. So with less than 3 months left, what exactly is the status of this project? To answer this question, my colleague Anviti Singh spoke to Indian Express's Damini Nath.
So Damini, let's begin with the background of the Smart Cities mission.
The Smart Cities mission was launched by the Prime Minister on June 25th, 2015. It is a mission of the Housing and Urban Affairs Ministry Cities were invited to participate in the challenge by submitting proposals for transforming their civic amenities and governance. And from January 2016 to June 2018, a total of 100 cities were selected in different rounds. And these cities were supposed to complete all their projects in 5 years from their selection.
Okay, so this 5-year deadline, what kind of projects did it include? And according to them, what are these smart cities supposed to look like?
Right, so when the mission was launched, the ministry issued broad guidelines, but they also said that each city would be able to decide what exactly it wants its smart version to look like. But in the broad guidelines, the basic principle was that the city should work for its people. It should be livable, sustainable, and give various opportunities for the residents to pursue different economic goals and interests. And of course, the other feature was the effective use of technology aimed at improving municipal services.
Right. And could you elaborate on that and give us some examples of these projects?
Okay. So among the projects that the cities have proposed, there is one common project that all 100 cities have implemented, and that is the Integrated Command and Control Center. So this is basically like the nerve center of the entire city. All the CCTV surveillance footage comes in there, the complaints regarding garbage or drainage issues come in there. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, these centers were converted into sort of emergency response centers where information about beds, oxygen, medicines and all was being imparted from.
Okay, so now you have mentioned that a few cities were selected back in 2015. So are there any cities that were selected in the original plan that have reached the smart city status or are close to reaching it?
Right. So initially when the mission was launched, like we just said, that the cities had 5 years to complete the projects from the date of their selection. But in 2021, after the pandemic, the ministry decided to extend the deadline for all the 100 cities to June 2023, which was the deadline for the last city to be selected, that was Shillong. So now with the June deadline approaching, there are a few cities, about 20, which are nearing completion and which officials say most likely will be able to complete it in time. But the large number of cities are still very far away from their goals.
And there was also a review regarding this recently. Could you tell us about that process a bit?
Yes, so there are regular reviews with officials at different levels routinely. But there was a review by the Housing and Urban Affairs Secretary on February 21st. Where 20 of the cities that were at the bottom of the ranking were called. And these cities were told to speed up their projects and were offered help by the ministry. But officials say it's unlikely that any of them will be able to finish their projects in time for the deadline. And in fact, about 49% of the projects of all of the 100 cities are yet to be completed.
And do we know why some of these cities are lagging behind?
Right. So officials are saying that, you know, while some of the cities were selected in 2018 and then the pandemic started in 2020, so it didn't give them that much time to actually get their projects on ground before the pandemic halted work. So there is that. And then 66 of the 100 cities are those with population less than 10 lakh. So these smaller cities have, you know, less capacity in terms of the officers available in the municipal corporations. Another thing is that consultants and experts don't want to move to the smaller cities to do projects. And the cities themselves have flagged the issue of approvals, of clearances for land and, you know, other permissions from the state government.
Okay, so since you mentioned the state government, the mission was launched by the center. Are the projects also approved by the center or do these states give their individual approvals?
No, so not exactly. The projects are approved by the ministry itself. But when it comes to certain, you know, approvals for using land or changing land use, and basically land comes under the state government. So in that way, there is some interplay, but the projects themselves are approved by the central government only. So say if you want to build, you know, a garbage processing plant in a particular area, but the land use for that does not allow it, it has to be approved. So usually it would be approved with support of the local land owning authority, which will come under the state government.
All right. So what happens next? As you said, there was a June 2023 deadline. And since so many cities are lagging behind, will the ministry extend the deadline? Or what will happen if the cities don't meet the goal they set for themselves?
Right. So apart from the 20 cities on the top of the ranking, which are likely to complete their projects, the rest of the cities are quite unlikely to complete their projects by June. In many of the cities, there are projects ongoing which will take 4 to 5 months more at least, is what officials say. But given that there are still many cities which have barely completed even a handful of projects, it's not clear, you know, if the government can go ahead and declare mission accomplished. The possibility of giving extensions is also there.
And could you talk about how much will the completion of these projects cost and who will bear these costs?
Right. So the projects are a total of 1.8 lakh crore, out of which about 43% is what is coming from the mission. 41% is what the government calls convergence with other missions, which could be from other ministries as well. And about 4.8% is from the city's own resources, and about 2.4% is from loans.
And in the end, we talk about the flu. A lot of people right now are experiencing sore throat, coughing, fever, and weakness, with some complaining that their symptoms are particularly severe. And it has also led some to question whether this is another variant of COVID-19 or something else entirely. In this segment, we speak to Indian Express's Anona Dutt about what exactly is going on here.
So what is happening right now is an increase in cases of flu, adenovirus, and COVID-19 altogether. We are seeing an increase in all respiratory infections. And hospitals have reported, till a few months back, there were hardly any COVID cases. And now they are seeing a few cases every now and then. And they're, of course, seeing cases of flu. But what is happening right now is not unusual. Every year, we do see these peaks in flu and other respiratory diseases, except for COVID, where a seasonal pattern hasn't been established yet because it was a pandemic and the waves were pretty different till now. But all the other infections like influenza, which is the flu, and adenovirus, we do see two peaks in a year. One when the season is changing, winter to summer, and one during the winters.
So basically what you're saying is that this has nothing to do with the new COVID-19 variant. And this is just something that happens every year when the weather changes. But is there anything different this time, at least as far as the symptoms are concerned?
So from what I've heard from the clinical perspective, so it is flu. The symptoms are not very different. You get a fever, you get a sore throat, runny nose, cough. But what is unusual this year is the cough lasting for a long time. So people have complained of the cough lasting for like 2 to 4 weeks. And, you know, people coming in with complaints of abdominal pain or chest pain because of coughing continuously. And some of the doctors have even said that they had to use medicines like steroids or nebulizers, which are used for people who have asthma or COPD. They had to use those medications to control the cough in patients with flu. So that is the most uncommon symptom that they're reporting this year.
And Anona, for those who may not know, could you tell us why we see flu cases rise when the season changes?
So basically, because the body is unable to fight off the infections very well, the immunity goes down when the season is changing and you're much more likely to catch the infection. And once you do get it, it's in circulation and more people get it. So that's why we see these peaks of respiratory infections during the season change.
And what do doctors say about the kind of precautions one can take to avoid this from happening?
Yes. So the interesting thing is, if you look at the data for 2020 and 2021, there were very few flu cases. And that was because we were taking a lot of precautions for COVID-19. We were masking up. We were not going to crowded areas. We were not gathering at homes. We were not gathering in closed environments. And all of these are common factors for the spread of any respiratory infection. So, I mean, the best way to protect against flu is to maintain hand hygiene, maintain coughing etiquette. Do not cough when there are other people around, like cover your mouth and wear a mask if you can. All of this will prevent infections.
You were listening to Three Things by The Indian Express. Today's show was edited and mixed by Abhishek Kumar and was produced by Utsha Sermon, Anviti Singh and me, Shashank Bhargav. If you like the show, then do subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also recommend the show to someone you think will like it. Share it with a friend or someone in your family. It's the best way for people to get to know about us. You can also tweet us at Express Audio and write to us at podcast@indianexpress.com.